WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Tomorrow is the 7th anniversary of the massacre that crushed the Chinese student democracy movement that had mobilized in Tiananmen Square. The world press was there, but my guest Karma Hinton says they missed much of the real story. She spent the past few years documenting what happened behind the scenes within the student movement. She found it wasn't the unified movement that was pictured. The movement was divided by power struggles over goals and tactics. The film suggests the students could have prevented a violent confrontation. Karma Hinton was born in China to American parents. Her father, William Hinton, was the author of the popular book Fanshen about one Chinese village during the revolution. Karma Hinton lived in China until 1971 when she was 21 and came to the U.S. She's made several films about Chinese life. Her new film about Tiananmen Square, The Gate of Heavenly Peace, will be shown on the PBS Frontline series tomorrow night. I asked her about divisions within the student movement over goals.
Oftentimes, when the students call for democracy and when they call or they criticize the Communist Party for being undemocratic, for being autocratic, for not permitting differences of opinion and so on, some students, at the same time as they denounce the government, as practicing that themselves, which meant that many students who suddenly discovered democracy as the ultimate truth, treated that as the ideologically correct, the same way as communism being the former ideologically correct, so that any disagreements over specific applications, over ideas, over tactics, then were denounced by the ideologically pure, so to speak, as heresy, as conspiracy, instigated by enemies, just in the same way as the government had denounced the student movement itself. So
so practically, what were some of the differences in tactics that the moderates and the radicals in Tiananmen advocated?
I think when we examine the movement, we see moments of opportunity, windows of opportunity, where it seemed possible that the protest movement could have worked with the officials inside the Communist Party who were more sympathetic to public expression of the desire for reform and protest against corruption and so on, to maybe foster one more step of positive change. When those moments presented themselves, I think some students felt that any kind of cooperation is giving up principle, is giving up the ultimate truth, and therefore is selling out.
One of the leaders of the student movement, Chai Ling, a 23-year-old woman, is shown in an interview within your movie, and she says that her goal was to provoke the government to violence against the students. She said, "Only when the square is awash with blood will the people of China open their eyes." But she confesses she really can't tell that to the students. Do you think that other people in the leadership shared that point of view, that they really wanted to provoke the government into violence to show how brutal the government could be and to help further radicalize and mobilize the population?
This type of situation happens often in political conflict, and especially when there is a stalemate between two political forces, that oftentimes each side would then hope for the other side to commit the ultimate atrocity to completely lose legitimacy, to lose their moral kind of claim to moral legitimacy. And it's very understandable at an extreme situation that the certain student leaders would develop such a desire. I'm convinced that that was not a sort of well-planned, consistent strategy. However, at moments of crisis and very sharp conflict, it's very easy for people to come up with that kind of idea. And I think that was what Chai Ling felt in those few days when the army was being sent into Beijing when there seemed to be not much hope for any other way out from her perspective. And so she's made these statements. These statements are not isolated statements by herself either. From our research, throughout the movement, there has been remarks made by people in the movement saying that it would be nice if a little blood was shed and so on, just to show up the government, so that how brutal the government was. Otherwise, the Chinese people won't see through them and so on. So that kind of talk has been going on and off here and there, scattered through the documents of your documentable sort of remarks within the movement.
I have to say that I recognized that point of view from the days when I was in college. There were a lot of student leaders who felt that way about the local police and about the student
exactly.
police, that if you really staged a confrontation, you would show them for the brutal thugs that they really were. And there was a certain amount of a sense of victory when there was tear gas on campus because, see, we showed how brutal the police really can be. Now you
exactly.
can mobilize against them.
Right, exactly. I think that's the same mentality. But when you look at the Chinese government, it has no short of desire to find some fault in the movement. You know, they really wanted to see some kind of violent incident or some kind of looting or whatever, so that it would have an excuse to denounce the movement as a totally lack of any moral standing, and it's to prove the government's point where the movement is something to instigate chaos. So the students had to be very, very careful not to give the government an excuse. So I think on both sides, this kind of mentality developed. I mean, the government probably right from the start had this kind of, the hardliners in the government. I have to be careful because it's so easy to speak of one camp or the other as a monolithic sort of whatever. I would say some of the hardliners who want to resist change, who would always see anybody protesting against anything that they do as enemies. These type of people wanted to see the movement sort of go off on a tangent somewhere and see some looting or see some violence, therefore they could suppress the movement.
There were so many people gathered in Tiananmen Square. Whenever there's a huge demonstration like that, it's hard to have any kind of, you know, democratic decision-making within the group because the group is so large and unwieldy. Who was actually making decisions about strategy?
Within a small circle of people who occupied Tiananmen Square, there was a limited process of, voting every night and talking over over what to do next and so on. They only represent those who actually pretty much wanted to stay in Tiananmen Square. So those who stayed represented those who wanted to stay and made decisions based on people who wanted to stay. Those who wanted to leave usually did not cast their votes to have others leave with them, but rather than left on their own if their votes couldn't count after a few times. So there was like a de facto process of ever radicalization on the square. For those who want another strategy, they voted with their feet, and those who wanted to stay then stayed.
Well, another thing you point out in the film is that there were always new groups of students arriving by train from the provinces.
Yes.
And they wanted to see action. They didn't want the demonstration to end.
Yeah, certainly that was true. In the situation like that, it's very difficult for a mass movement to make decisions, especially when people who's been in Tiananmen Square for a longer time and who are thinking about other strategies, then that excitement, that sort of call to justice, to the ideal, to the sense of making history right on Tiananmen Square was very, very attractive to students all over the country, and many came to Beijing to join this great, glorious cause. And the new arrivals in Beijing certainly had no interest in seeing it end, whatever the strategy could be. So that there were always newcomers who wanted to stay longer, whereas some of the people who stayed for a while then might have voted or wanted to do something else, and most of them left when they thought that the occupation of Tiananmen Square was not the most effective way, in their view, to push for democracy in China.
My guest is Karma Hinton. She co-directed the film The Gate of Heavenly Peace. It will be shown on the PBS series Frontline tomorrow night. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Karma Hinton, her documentary The Gate of Heavenly Peace re-examines what went on 7 years ago in Tiananmen Square. In the research that you did, how does the amount of government violence compare to what you think was reported in the press right after?
I think there is a certain amount of exaggeration. The main error was where the violence happened. Because Tiananmen Square had been sort of the symbol of the whole movement, people are used to calling it Tiananmen Square massacre, thinking that the massacre took place right at the center of Tiananmen Square. That was not true. Most of the violence and the bloodshed took place in the streets leading to Tiananmen Square, especially one of the main avenues running east and west, leading into Tiananmen Square from the west. Most of the killings and the injuring of people took place there when the troops encountered large numbers of citizens, workers, ordinary citizens, including students, but they're not in the majority, trying to block their way into the square. By the time in early morning, June 4th, when the students voted by voice to leave the square and the troops were moving in to take over the center of Tiananmen Square, there was no massacre, there was no shooting. Not into the crowd, at least.
So what did happen? Who was hurt and where were they?
Who was hurt? Many ordinary citizens and a smaller number of students who were in the streets blocking quite a distance away from Tiananmen Square, started quite a distance away from Tiananmen Square, trying to block the advance of the troops. Those people were either killed or injured. And the students who stayed right in the center of Tiananmen Square on the monument, they were not killed or injured. In the center of Tiananmen Square, at the monument where the students took the vote to leave, under Spanish television camera, there was no massacre.
Do you think that this story of the Tiananmen Square massacre was misreported?
Yes. As I mentioned earlier, that because everything was the whole movement was symbolized by Tiananmen Square. It was just easy to say Tiananmen movement, Tiananmen protest, Tiananmen massacre. That's one thing. And another thing is, I think, because of the brutality and the killings in the streets, it's for people who talk about that, to a certain extent, it's not necessary to distinguish where it happened. It happened in connection to the suppression of this movement, which was symbolized by Tiananmen. So, okay, Tiananmen massacre. That's sort of one of the reasons why the Tiananmen massacre became sort of this myth that became anyone who referred to the incident always said Tiananmen massacre. We prefer to say Beijing massacre because it took place in Beijing streets, not at the center of Tiananmen Square. Another reason why the reporting at that time focused on Tiananmen Square was some students who were actually not shot at, who left Tiananmen Square, spoke to the press and said, and here are documents in Hong Kong newspapers and so on that I can find, and quote, that said that they were on the monument and machine guns were shooting at them and they tried to get off the steps of the monument to leave, but every time they tried to get down, they were shot back up with machine guns and so on. And from all the people we could find to interview who were at the center of at the monument, we could never verify that story.
So you're saying that the massacre took place on the streets of Beijing, but not in the center of Tiananmen Square. So is that cause to revise our opinions of how the Chinese government handled the protests? I mean, does it finally make a difference whether the massacre was in the streets or in Tiananmen? There still was a massacre.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't matter where the massacre and the killings took place. As long as the government used lethal force, used guns to deal with a peaceful protest by the citizens, it's wrong. So on that level, it doesn't matter. But from a historian's point of view, what happened at what time and what place is very important in the accuracy of history. And I also feel on another level, this is important. It's because who made the sacrifice? If people who are at the center of the square claim that they bore the sacrifice and they were the ones who sacrificed their lives and they shed blood for democracy, and taking this around the world to to build up their own stature, to build up a mythical experience that they didn't actually go through, I think that is an insult to those who died in the streets. Therefore, on that level, it is important to figure out who died where. In terms of the evaluation of the government, how it handled the movement, where the deaths took place is not as important.
You're telling a very complicated version of a story that I think was very simplified for a lot of us. I mean, the students in Tiananmen Square symbolized a democracy movement. They symbolized the idealism of young people and the dedication of young people to fight against an oppressive regime. You're telling a story of infighting, of students who were kind of similar to the government hardliners and their approach to their own ideology. You're talking about some students assuming false credit for a certain degree of heroism when they weren't the ones as under attack as the people in the streets. Do you think that after you tell your story in your movie that the students at Tiananmen Square seem less heroic, that it becomes more difficult to use them as a symbol of democracy? And how do you feel about that?
Well, I think our film is humanizing a protest movement. I think a person who grew up under a communist education in China, that I'm very much, I guess I have a distaste for myth, for kind of glorification and purification of a process. I think we are all human beings, we all have our foibles, that even though we may protest against injustice, we are not perfect ourselves. And that is fine. I think only when one realizes that this world is very complicated, that no single person or single force can possess the whole truth, can we begin to think about a more humane society. When a movement protesting against injustice quickly start to foster the idea that there is one overriding truth and that it can be represented solely by the ideologically pure, then the democracy is already doomed. So in that sense, I think the heroism, the idealism is no way dampened by a more complex presentation of history. The heroism, idealism is expressed in the midst of all of this, and that's only human.
Karma Hinton, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Karma Hinton co-directed The Gate of Heavenly Peace. It will be shown on many public TV stations tomorrow night on the Frontline series.